episode 3. Here we go.
We're back.
It's a new year. It's a new exciting opportunity to talk about advertising and design.
That's right. And I think before we forget, let's let our legions of fans know where they can find us.
The bevy fans.
Yeah. They can find us at mocktheagency.com, of course, or you can find us on the socials.
Yeah. What's your social handle, Rob?
Mock the Agency. At Mock the Agency.
Yeah.
Instagram, LinkedIn, for Facebook.
Sure. Yeah, give us a cyber snoop us. Take a look.
We're not hard to find.
Yeah, and shoot us some feedback. We'd love to hear what everybody has to say about everything. So at the time we're sitting down to chat about podcasts and whatnot right now, right? It's a new year, 2023. Thought it might be fun to do a little topic on what was your favorite holiday present. We'll say Christmas present, right? But what's your favorite seasonal sort of holiday present that you've ever received, right? And then maybe tie that into favorite project we've ever worked on, right?
Mm-hmm.
For one of our clients or maybe even not even a client, just favorite project you've ever worked on. And it could be a personal thing, I guess, theoretically.
Okay.
So who wants to go first? You want me to go first?
Why don't you go first with favorite present.
Favorite present. Okay, it's going to be super cliche, but favorite present I've ever gotten was a bicycle. So, I mean, call it 1950. You're already shaking your head. It's super boring. But the reason
I'm shaking my head because literally that's exactly what I was going to talk about.
Yours is a bicycle too?
Yeah. So let's do two bicycle stories.
Okay. Well, bicycle story number one is I used to go to grandma and grandpa's house, for Christmas morning, right? My grandma and grandpa, we all lived in the same town back in California. And so go over there, we go through Christmas, open all the presents, the traditional socks, underwear, all the boring stuff from grandma and grandpa, right? Christmas is over, everything's done. I got whatever toys I got, Star Wars figures or Legos or whatever, right? Back in the days. and my grandpa is like, hey, Donald, I need your help out here in the backyard. You need to come out and help. And I'm like, oh, God, it's like Christmas. I'm having to do chores now with my grandpa. He wants me to come out to his greenhouse and do something with, whatever. He was a big gardener and whatnot. And so it's the traditional like, oh, I go out to the greenhouse and there is a specialized, wasn't the rock hopper. It was the stump jumper, specialized mountain bike stump jumper. And I like totally lost it and was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And like, you couldn't get me off the bicycle that entire day. I mean, it's California, so it wasn't like freezing cold, and their backyard was humongous. I mean, it was acreages back then. So I was just literally like making my own little courses and riding a mountain bike around. Totally insane.
That was when mountain bikes first sort of hit hard.
Yeah, it was
the Specialized owned the.
They owned the market.
They owned it.
Yeah,
stump
jumper. And I think it had like
copper.
It had like shocks. Yeah, or it had like a shock in the like gooseneck or something. There was something going on with the shock system.
Shocks on the forks.
Is that where it was?
I think it was on the front forks.
It was incredible. Addendum to the story is that unfortunately that bike was stolen. So that's a downer. Yeah. It was left unlocked in my own backyard. Somebody went into the backyard, stole my bike. I mean, this was years and years and years later.
Sure.
And left their jalopy. They left their broken down, busted up bike and stole my bike. That's random. I wasn't expecting to share that part of the story.
Was that what made you start road biking after? I know you were a road biker.
Great question. Now, my dad was a big cyclist. I mean, huge cyclist. So, after that, I mean, and, no one wants to ride bikes with their dad or whatever, that kind of stuff. So, I mean, it wasn't until later, end of high school and whatnot, that I really started sort of road cycling with my dad. For a while, but so super cliche bicycle story number one. I'm gonna need to hear your bicycle story.
Now. Yeah, I was really thinking bicycle story because I mine goes back farther. But I was born in the 70s, but grew up an 80s kid, right? So at the time, it was kind of mid 80s. I couldn't tell you the year, early to mid 80s. But at the time, like freestyling. Like BMX freestyle. BMX had always been popular in the early 80s, but then you had this new wave of people riding bikes, freestylers.
Yeah. What was the main guy's name?
There was a ton of them. I mean, you had GT, you had Haro, you had Redlon, you had all those guys.
Wasn't there a guy's name start with an M? Wasn't there an M? No.
Well, you're thinking about Dave Mira.
But that was later. That's much later. Much later. Yeah.
So me and my buddy, Grant, who was my neighborhood buddy, we started kind of getting into freestyling and stuff. And I had some crappy little bike and I wanted a Haro Sport.
Okay.
Which at the time was a lot of money. I didn't think there was any chance that I was going to get it.
It's not going to happen. Yep.
There was no big reveal. I mean, it was the traditional.
The bike is under the tree.
There's a bow on the handlebar.
Oh, really? Okay.
So not a big reveal, but like I flipped out.
Okay.
And then that launched this crazy, just like love affair for freestyling. And we would go up, me and Grant would go we'd take our bikes up to, there's a bike shop for all you Atlanta people, a bike shop up in Marietta called Free Flight.
Okay.
And we would go see,
shout out
to Free Flight. We would go see Hutch, GT, Haro. They would all put on demos
at the store.
Yeah. At the store.
That's incredible.
But it was so funny. If you go look, you can look up all the old videos on YouTube, but this was before you had half pipes.
Yeah.
No one had figured out to build the ramp.
Yeah.
Two quarter pipes together. So you just had one quarter pipe at the end of a long runway. And
okay.
Guys would,
yeah,
would do that and do all the street stuff. So,
fascinating.
So that was, and it ended with the last freestyle trick that I tried to do was about 3 years ago
when
I was up in Newport, Rhode Island.
No way.
Yeah, and we had city bikes. And I tried to do a trick and totally busted
on a big, heavy city. Yeah, that's like wrecking your little scooters or whatever.
There may have been
right?
a couple of beers involved.
That's fantastic.
But anyway, yeah. That was
What's the addendum to that bike story, though? Mine was stolen. What happened to that bike?
What happened to that bike? That's a great question. I don't even know if I can
you just
tell
grew
you.
Out of it
I
or
think
just
I just
fizzled
grew out
whatever.
Of it yeah. and it may have been a hand-me-down to somebody, some other kid in the neighborhood or something.
Well, I don't, you know, a bike is an amazing gift. I mean, there may be cliches, but the freedom associated with learning how to ride your bike is incredible. I remember when I gave my first child a bike, we did the traditional string thing, right? Where it's like, have you heard of this?
No.
Whatever, all the string, you know, where you basically use like an entire roll of string and you weave it through the whole house and outside and around the thing.
Yeah.
And you got to like undo, it's like a obstacle course kind of thing. You got to like, you know, get to the end of the string. Right. And so, I mean, we had, I don't know, tied all these different rolls of string together and went all through the backyard and went outside, upstairs, down all this crazy stuff or whatever. And then there was a bike at the end of the string.
I just
awesome.
Remember growing up. I mean, we had our little gang of neighborhood dudes and we would,
you were a biker gang.
Yeah. We were a biker gang and we would, we were right behind McDonald's on Roswell Road, and we would go over there and we would just ride our bikes up and down Roswell Road for
it's
hours.
Awesome. It's awesome.
Yeah, it was great.
Good times.
It was great.
Speaking of good times, I don't know how to transition over to favorite projects. Favorite bikes. Do you want to go first on favorite projects?
I'll go first.
Do you want me? Okay. Well, I hope you don't pick mine because we're about to, maybe we'll have the same moment again.
I don't think it will
again.
Because I didn't work on it with you.
Oh, man. Okay.
Uh-oh. I was trying to think why it was my favorite.
Why
project.
Is your favorite?
I think in the spirit of adventure, that's my segue from freestyling and the bike. I got a chance to work on, kind of as a hired gun, to work on the launch of a video game.
Oh, yeah.
Called Splinter Cell, which is one of the Tom Clancy franchise games.
Yes.
And it was we had no budget to work with, which is surprising given how successful that was. And I think so we came up with all of these sort of little wacky video ideas. And one of those was we were going to shoot at night.
Okay.
And we needed I had this office space and we were going to kind of run around the office space and we needed artillery.
Yes.
So, I have a good friend of mine who is a former police officer.
Okay.
Who will remain nameless.
Yeah, of course.
But somehow
everyone has to be anonymous in all these podcasts.
Yeah. Somehow we talked him into bringing over a couple of guns.
A duffel bag full of guns?
Well, I mean, at the time we were like, hey, can you bring over a couple of guns?
Yeah.
We want to shoot this video.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean,
exactly.
We had no license to do this.
Yeah.
We had no business doing this.
Sure, sure.
So my buddy shows
up. Just moxie. That's all we had, the moxie to do it.
Yeah.
Who's got
the
guns?
So my buddy shows up with a duffel bag of guns and lays out on this giant silver commercial kitchen table that we had. Like, I don't know, it had to be 10 or 12 guns.
Okay, lots of guns.
And like not like AK-40.
Yeah, legit guns.
AR-15.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like legit guns.
Yeah.
And we're like, whoa, this is going to be great.
Yeah.
So the sun starts to go down. We're waiting until the shooting hour. And
we're shooting what, like teaser videos?
These are like little,
like
little campaign teaser,
got it. Okay.
Because it's a first person shooter game.
Okay.
So it was sort of that
general idea.
In this really cool location. So, idiots we are.
Yeah.
We are running around the complex, like with real guns.
I think we can all see where this is going.
Pointing them at not at one another, of course.
Yeah. But you've got a guy on the other end with a camera, presumably.
We're running around with a camera and we're doing all sorts of things and climbing walls and and it was so much fun because the work ended up cool. It was great. It was successful. It was a fun campaign. But I think it was fun for me because it was like being a kid again. And fortunately, nobody called the active police.
Okay. That's what I was worried this was going.
I know. It seemed like it was going there. And it probably should have gone there.
Yeah.
But it didn't. We somehow got away with it. But I think it was just that. It was that idea that, and I remember thinking to myself, like, I can't believe I get to do this for, mm-hmm. and get paid to like run around and play army almost. Yeah. And it was that idea of like, hey, work can be really fun.
Yeah.
And like, you know,
sure.
blend the two together and have fun with it. So that was probably one of my favorite projects. Not because the work ended up being so great, but I think just the production of it and the fun time I had making it.
Well, it's interesting that we're business partners and have been for a number of years because we both have bicycle stories, and actually my favorite project involves guns as well, which is so unexpected for me, right? But
it
transitioning, and you can jump in and help share the story because you probably know where this is going, but I think actually one of my favorite projects, and again, similar mindset in regards to limited budget sometimes maximizes creativity, right?
Right.
Because you've got to really stretch your dollar. You've got to really determine what's the best way to get this thing done, right? But we were tasked with helping to do press kits and launch a documentary movie, right? The documentary movie was called Trigger, The Ripple Effect of Gun Violence, right? And it wasn't a pro-gun. It wasn't anti-gun. It wasn't anything. It was just literally a straight down the middle documentary about gun violence in America and sort of why it is and how it's come to be and sort of, you know, just talking about it in general. Right. And so we were tasked with doing the press kit for all this and sort of launching and helping to sort of amplify some of the PR movements for it. Right. So the idea that, that you probably came up with, quite honestly, you know, collaboratively or whatnot was, you know, we designed all of the collateral. We designed the press kits, the pocket folders, all the inserts, the posters, you know, all the different things. Right. And I think we printed, how many of these things did we print? Like 10,000 of these things? How many did we print? It doesn't even matter.
I don't remember, but it was a lot.
We printed a lot of these things. Right. Then we collated everything together. Right. And then we took it to a gun range and shot everything
with
different guns. We got the guns from the same guy.
Guy that the project I talked about.
Yeah, exactly.
He's our arms dealer.
That's why I'm saying it's hilarious that we're business partners because we both have the same, it's like, you know, two halves of the same mind, right? At times. So yeah, he provided the artillery again, right? And we brought it to the gun range and then we shot all of our excellently designed, printed and collated work with guns and didn't really care if it was legible or not or what was happening, what, you know, because when the bullet went through, you know, the press packets and whatnot, it kind of burned and like fused everything together. It was crazy, right? So when you unassemble it, you're like, whoa, like you really, you know, and then it was all about trying to find, this sounds crazy, I'll say out loud, but trying to find the guns that provided the best, what do you call that? Like flare out the back
the or whatever. The best bullet. We had to find the right
The best
caliber,
bullet hole, right?
The right caliber.
It was totally insane. And then we obviously mailed everything. Everything was, well, the direct mail component of everything went out in clear envelopes so everybody could see it, right? So, again, it's one of my most favorite things because it's so memorable and it's, for me, you know, in terms of the journey, but also so highly impactful of the work really tying in to the movie and how everything was really, really unified together, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I've got, you know, we both have tons and tons and tons of other projects. Like I never get sick of seeing anything we ever do out in the real world. Like when we go to the grocery store and I see things that we've designed or whatever, I still always get a kick out of that. You're right. But I don't know. I just remember this was really, really fun one and really like, whoa, I can't believe we just did this. Well, and also we like sold it through, like, I remember having that phone call with the client, which was like, here's what we're going to do. We're going to shoot everything with guns.
Yeah. But there's sometimes that like with that one, I remember when we were talking about the idea, we were like, okay, well we can, you know, we can graphic design a kind of a bullet hole in it. There were a few different ways to think about production.
Yeah, that's true.
And the obvious answer was if there's a way to do it, we have to really shoot it.
We have to shoot it. Yeah.
Because authenticity is critical.
Yeah, it was crazy.
A fake bullet hole doesn't work as well. It's not nearly as impactful.
Yeah, correct. Then also, too, we brought everybody from the office to the gun range.
Well, yeah, it ended up being a fun company outing.
Then everybody ended up shooting our own work, which is really kind of bizarre in a weird way.
There's sometimes where, because I remember when we talked about the concept with the client, they were immediately like, well, of course.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those, you, and it doesn't happen all the time, but sometimes you hit land on an idea where you're like, all right, pencil stamp. Like,
yeah, this is it.
I think we just nailed it.
Yeah.
And the client's like, yep, you guys nailed it.
Yeah, that was good.
So let's do this. Let's make sure that in the next week or so, let's put that piece up on the socials and you guys can see.
That's a good idea.
You can kind of see with that.
That's a good idea. It's an old deal. It's not that old, I guess, but that's a fun one. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one.
All right. Well, I think that's it for today's episode, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's all we got. Well, thanks for tuning in, everyone. Again, go find us at mocktheagency.com and on the socials. And you can check out some of our work and feel free to reach out and get in touch if you want to chat about work or life or whatever. And also, before I forget, before we play our killer music outro, shout out to Kyler. Who's one of our graphic designers, affectionately referred to as Mr. C.
Mr. C.
He composed that music for us here in-house. So
yeah.
Great job on that.
All and right, Mr.
We'll talk
C.
soon.
Play us out.
Here we go.
Mock the podcast.